Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, up. Talk, why won't you listen? Argue, why shut, won't you talk, see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
Well, welcome, everyone. This is our first show. I'm just glad to be here, and I'm glad you're here. This is Spouting Off, and it is Tuesday, January 15th, 2019. And we've been on hiatus now for, just a little while. And the reason for that, as many of you regular listeners know, is that our illustrious producers, the network that carries Spouting Off, Doug and Don Newsome, unfortunately sustained unimaginable losses in the Paradise Fire. And that only happened. We're going to talk to them. I told them I wanted them to be my first guests. And since Doug is my producer, my live producer, we're going to talk to him in the second half of the show. So you're definitely going to want to stay tuned for that. In all of the time that I've been gone, I've been doing a lot of fill-in radio and writing, a whole bunch of op-eds, having a blast with that, and doing a lot of talk radio interviews around the country with various different talk show hosts. That has been so much fun. Just the array and styles of different talk show hosts is endlessly interesting to me. From slow talkers to fast talkers to people that let me say everything to people where I have to get a word in edgewise, where I can barely get a word in edgewise. And it's the host's show. So I try to roll with the punches, but it is just amazingly fun. The other thing that's fun is I can do it from practically anywhere as long as I'm in a quiet place and I have a decent phone connection. I do it from my cell phone, and thank goodness I have a decent cell phone now, which I didn't have about a year and a half ago, thanks to my partner who happens to be male. And because I have a cell phone, I did it last week in the middle of dinner, and I just just went over to a quiet room and talked to someone from, who knows, Cincinnati, Ohio, about whatever was the topic of the day. So my endless and lifetime love affair with talk radio continues. Anyway, we are going to talk to Doug and Don, at least Doug, he didn't tell me, about their experience. I absolutely wanted them to be our first guest, but we are back in business here at Spouting Off. We will be broadcasting live, unless I tell you otherwise, from now until hopefully forever, on Tuesdays, 2 p.m. Mountain, 4 p.m. Eastern, and you figure out the rest. So if you'd like to join us, and I'm going to just dive right in, but if you'd like to join us about anything that's on your mind, you can call me toll free at 888-627-6008. Remember, we will have all the in-go and outro music when the show goes to podcast. And then from there, you never know where it's going to be or never know what's going to happen to it. So, all I can do is talk about what has been happening now, because if I tried to talk about what's been happening in the last 2 months, I would never get to our guests. But currently, we have a partial government shutdown, which the Democrats have been trying to convince us is terrible, awful, and horrible. Now, I do feel some compassion for people who aren't getting their paychecks. But the media and the left would like us to believe that having a delayed paycheck is infinitely worse than getting shot and murdered by an illegal alien. The media has completely ignored the facts on the ground, the facts as we know them, and they are selective about what they're outraged about. So Nancy Pelosi, who's just become a caricature of herself, she looks like a clown with a face that never seems to move. I think one of Jeff Dunham's puppets' face probably moves more than Nancy Pelosi's does. But the disingenuousness and the lies are so ridiculous and so out there that I continue to think it's a gift. It's a gift to watch these people try to cover up such obvious lies. The wall, as you know, Donald Trump has gone to the mattresses over the wall. That's an old mafia term, going to the mattresses, which means there's a mafia war and they get mattresses and have all the guys sleep on the floor until or until stuff blows over. And then, of course, we have the endless, never-ending story of Russia, 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 which is the equivalent of Marsha, Marsha, Marsha. It's hard to believe we're going to turn off that telephone, which we forgot to do. It is stunning and impossible that after, 2-3 months, whatever it's been since we've been on hiatus, the left is still trying to perpetuate this lie and this propaganda known as the Russia investigation. It seems clearer than ever, and this is even what I am going to talk about. I'm talking about this now. No matter what has happened, still we have this phony, fraudulent notion that there is a Russian investigation of collusion with Russia. What is so interesting is that even if there were collusion with Russia, it wouldn't have been a crime anyway. So why are they doing it? Well, most people who listen to conservative talk radio know that they're basically trying to reverse an election. But there has become another reason that has emerged, and that is that the corrupt FBI, CIA, the Justice Department, and on, is trying to cover up their own misdoings and misdeeds. And if they keep this investigation going, they'll will be able to say, well, I can't answer that question because we have an active investigation. It is so transparent, although they haven't been trying to be. And it just goes on and on. People keep asking, why will they never get to the true misdeeds of Hillary Clinton? Well, that's part of what they're trying to cover up. I don't think for a minute that they care about the well-being of the awful and terrible Hillary Clinton. What I think is that Hillary Clinton holds the key to all their own misgivings and misdoings, misdeeds, I've been saying, because have you ever noticed when you know someone is corrupt, they always appoint somebody who is at least or more corrupt than they are, because otherwise they can't be bought. And I do believe that that is the biggest reason why Donald Trump is the enemy of the deep state that he is. And that's because he really can't be bought. Didn't you always wish and hope at some point in your life that somebody would go to Washington? I know I have. That really couldn't be bought and who would be the representative of the people. And look at how drastically different the agenda and the priorities are of someone who can't be bought and who won the White House under extraordinarily unlikely circumstances to represent the people of the United States, the ones that the deep state is supposed to represent but doesn't. And so here we have a Donald Trump who is a drastic departure from almost anything we've ever seen. That is the reason, ladies and gentlemen, that is the reason he is such an enemy to them. If you'd like to know more about that, I just had a new blog post out just today, and it's what we call evergreen, meaning you can read it almost at any time as long as Donald Trump is in office, because it's called the five reasons why for the Donald Trump magic. Now, I use magic, the word magic, kind of advisedly, and I use it to determine that there's a whole lot of people that simply can't comprehend that Donald Trump has know-how and has strategy. So it's called The Five Reasons for the Magic of Donald Trump. And you can find it currently, or you can find it in the archives of my website, www.karencataline.com, spelled Karen the normal way. There's an amazing number of ways to spell Karen, but it's karencataline.com. And there you will find op-eds, blog posts, podcasts of this program, lots of fun podcasts of a few of the interviews I've been doing around the country. It's hard to get them all up, and it's certainly hard sometimes to find the podcasts, but boy, are they fun. And also when I've guest hosted on what is known as terrestrial radio. I didn't know that's what the term is. It's called terrestrial radio, meaning AM talk radio that I've been listening to since I was 14. All of that to say that that's not even the main subject that has been on my mind for, gosh, weeks now. And I don't mind telling you that I've been spending the last 5 or 6 hours or more writing an op-ed about it. So I'm not going to give a whole lot of it away, because I'd like to submit this to several publications. As you know, if you've been looking at any of my op-eds, I do have op-eds you can find in Town Hall, frontpagemag.com, just did one of mine a couple of weeks ago, Investors Business Daily, American Thinker, and a host of others. Daily Caller, love these places. And that's the reason that print newspapers aren't doing very well, because people get their news and their op-eds most often online. But nonetheless, I always look at the list of the 100 top conservative websites, and then I try to get mine on the ones that I think will get the most hits. That's the name of the game these days. But mostly, it's really not for self-aggrandizement. What it's for is to get certain messages out. Because as you know, conservatives have a much greater challenge in getting their messages out than the average liberal, who the liberals seem to speak and talk and march in lockstep. And it's becoming comical to watch them have the same talking points on every news station, on every commentator's lips. It's quite amazing if people think that they just, you know, divined this word. Like, for example, they decided, and I watch a lot of Tucker Carlson, who I think is great. He's the only reason these days that I even watch or have Fox News. And yes, I will get to my point, I promise. Tucker Carlson, they have these wonderful audio clips of people saying the same word. So the word went out. They have these, I'm sure they have email lists where they tell everybody, here's the message we have to hammer home, hammer, hammer, hammer. And so they were saying that the government shutdown is a manufactured crisis. Remember that? It's a manufactured crisis. Never mind that people are getting killed and murdered, and totally unvetted illegal aliens are coming through our borders. That's not a crisis. It's a crisis because Donald Trump made a promise and the Democrats can't afford to give him a win. Not ever, not know how. Even if it means, God forbid, how serious I'm about to say, even if it means the death of American citizens, the safety of American citizens, the liberals and the establishment Republicans refuse to secure our border. Here we have a courageous president who is never supposed to be president. There is a God who has decided that it is his priority to keep as best he can Americans safe from illegal aliens, massive amounts of drugs. And I've been writing extensively on these things. So let's get back to my point before I run out of time. What has been on my mind is a story that came out around November when I still wasn't doing Spouting Off about an 11-year-old drag queen named Desmond Napolis. An 11-year-old drag queen. Yes, indeed, folks. And I was so incensed by it for a host of reasons that I will tell you some. I knew I had to write something about this, but I also knew that at the risk of being slightly immodest, I was the right person to write it. In 2012, I wrote a book called Fatlash, Food Police, and the Fear of Thin. It has an unlikely title, I'd say. And if I had it to do over again, I might have changed the title. We might be putting a second edition together, but we'll probably keep the same title just to update a few things here and there. But in that book, and it won a few awards, what it was a personal account. I don't talk about it much on Spouting Off, but when I get the opportunity and it's appropriate, I talk about it. Never has it been more appropriate. Fatlash, as I like to call it in shorthand, is a personal account and a professional analysis of my experience in child beauty pageants, food restriction, and my stage mother on steroids. And that's what it says on the back cover. My stage mother on steroids, who, may she rest in peace, had a stage mother on steroids too. And that's one of the reasons she thought that's what mothers did with their daughters. Now, the story is not only very, very personal, but it's also analytical. It's kind of as if I used myself as a guinea pig or as a case study. And on the cover, it says, this is a cautionary tale of what not to do. And the book took me 15 years to write. I wasn't doing it every day, mind you, but I had never written a book before. And I knew that it was going to be a very hard story to tell, not because it was going to be cathartic, because I had done all the work a couple decades before. It was going to be a hard story to write because I had so much to say and I didn't know how to tell the story. So it went through many, many incarnations until I found a wonderful editor by the name of Jessica Swift, whom I have interviewed before on this program. And she, within 5 months, the book was written. I gave her a manuscript that needed lots of work, and we published the book in September of 2012. And the book is a combination of stories about my life and my beauty pageant mom. And what inspired it 15 years before was the story of JonBenet Ramsey. Not the murder mystery part of the story, which has continued forever and has never ceased, but the beauty pageant story. I was so incensed. I was living in Los Angeles, and a People magazine came out, and of course they were putting out stories of JonBenet Ramsey about it once a month or once every other week. And the cover, I think, if I remember correctly, wanted to know if child beauty pageants were dangerous for kids. So I fired off like a 3-line letter to the editor, which they printed, and they get hundreds of thousands of letters to the editor to People magazine. And it said, if you really want to know whether child beauty pageants are dangerous for children, ask an adult who's been there. They're always asking children, well, what do you think? Do you want to do this? Well, how preposterous. Kids are always going to say what they've been coached to say, or they're going to say what they're smart enough to know their parent wants them to say. So you've got to be able to talk to an adult who's processed the information. And my point, among others, was that child beauty pageants, it's not the pageant itself, with the exception of these despicable glitz pageants of the type of toddlers in tiaras, which thank God is off the air now, where little girls 4 years old are dressed like Las Vegas showgirls, well beyond their years and well beyond their ability to understand. But it doesn't take a pageant to sexualize a child. And that was one of the points of my book, is that if you have the kind of parent that lives through their child, which unfortunately I did, then they can sexualize a child in any environment, before grandparents, before parents, in a variety of situations, in everyday life. That's what you have to address, is the education of parents. So I could go on with this, but I'll never have time to talk about the 11-year-old drag queen, which for me was the story that bridges the gap between my book and politics, which is what I'm doing now. It has everything, this story. It has child sexualization, and it has, oh, a whole lot of politics. What concerns me is that the culture and the general public, while some people are up in arms about this story, and I'll give you a few details about it, the public is not, and is having yet another debate and argument about whether this is damaging to a child, much like they were having the debate more than 20 years ago now, whether child beauty pageants and glitz pageants were damaging to children. This inability to recognize boundaries between adults and children concerns me greatly. It has concerned me for decades. This inability to recognize when adults are living through their children with a political agenda, or a personal agenda, whatever it may be, erases the boundaries between adulthood and childhood. That is what I have been writing about on and off for a very long time. And if you add on top of it the fact that this is a political hot potato, and the left, the virulent left, has been pushing so-called LGBT politics, drag queen, transgender politics, and I've been writing a lot about that as well. Because as Andrew Breitbart once said, politics is downstream from culture. It's the culture that the liberals and the leftists are trying to change and impose upon us in some of the most ugly and nasty and sick ways I have ever seen. In the span of 2 or 3 months, no, less than that, you have more than one child drag queen, one in Canada, another one in Brooklyn, and you have a national program called Drag Queen Story Hour. I got to tell you, I went to the protest of Drag Queen Story Hour in northern Colorado. It was so crowded. You had to have a ticket to go in. I don't know what happened inside, but I watched a lot of protests going on the outside. And it was your basic liberals against mostly Christians arguing about culture and about what is and is not appropriate. They weren't having a lot of conversations. I had a few myself. But if you superimpose gender and sexual identity politics, which I would have to do a whole nother show on, and I probably will, on this sexualizing a child and using a child for political purposes, you've got an ugly, nasty witch's brew of a mix. And what also concerns me, and what I will be coming out with in an op-ed, I don't know where we're going to put it yet, but I promise you, I will have an op-ed on this. I've been spending hours and hours and hours writing it, hoping that I could get all the points I wanted to say into it. But what is most, there's so much that concerns me about this story, but what particularly concerns me is that in the Good Morning America, which you can find on YouTube, and I would not link to it, and I can't even watch it, Desmond Napolis makes a big entrance, and he dances suggestively down a big, long aisle, and the audience is going wild with applause. The hosts are gushing about how wonderful and courageous he is. Not one person in the audience on national television stands up and says, "What the hell are you doing? What are you doing?" And that's what concerns me. Why are they not able to speak up? You know why? Because the hard left and the gender politicians have been spending the last several 3 to 5 plus years or more bullying the rest of us. That if you disagree with any aspect of gender or gay politics, you are a homophobe. You are a genderphobe. You are a bad, terrible thing. This is so insidious and ugly of a political tool being used on average, normal, everyday people. Number one, it's not a crime to dislike drag queens. Guess what? It is not against the law to dislike a drag queen of any age. But that's not what you would hear from the left. The left will call you every name in the book if you don't like drag queens. I was in the theater for 30 years. I've seen plenty of drag queens and gay people. But I shouldn't have to defend myself whether or not I like or accept them. That's pure bullying tactics. So whether you like drag queens or whether you don't, it's your choice. The problem is that the public has been so bullied into trying to defend themselves that they're not intolerant of gay people or transgenders or drag queens or whatever. They're taking leave of their common sense and not able to distinguish between a child being sexualized and used as a political pawn and a political agenda that should be meant for adults to hash it out. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? Now you understand why it's so hard for me to write this darn thing, because I have so much to say on the issue. And it's hard to put it in, oh, I don't know, about 1,000 words. I can go on and on for 4 hours on the subject. But for an op-ed, you got to have, you know, a reasonable amount of words that someone can get through and know what the heck you're talking about. So it's a challenge. It's been a fun challenge to do that. And I've also learned a lot. And I encourage you, if you're willing, you know, read my stuff, argue with me, tell me I'm wrong, tell me, you know, or post it. If you like it, post it on Facebook. I would love to connect with you on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at Karen Cataline. You can find me, wait a minute, is that hashtag? Yeah. Hashtag Karen, it's all Karen Cataline. So Twitter, Facebook, or my website, all of them you can connect. But I love debate and discussion. So if you have something to say, I would love to hear it. So that is, in a very small microcosm, what is bothering me about the 11-year-old drag queens. And I will probably talk more in the weeks to come about some of the experiences that I had regarding Drag Queen Story Hour. I didn't even get to the point, and I do want to mention this. So do you think, you don't have to call at this very moment because I'm about to have a guest, but Do you think at all that there is a connection between drag queen story hour, getting drag queens, adult drag queens all over the country to read stories to children between the ages of 2 and 8 years old in public libraries? Do you think there is a connection there between that and the fact that we suddenly, out of nowhere, it seems, have more than one grade school drag queen, 11 years old, and in Canada, 10 years old, that are being celebrated and being called drag kids, being sexualized and exploited and used for adult purposes? This makes me crazy. It makes me crazy. I'm going to write, I hope, a whale of an article that I hope you'll read. And as soon as it's out, I'll talk about it here on Spouting Off. But we got to come to our senses. And certainly the key to a lot of it right now is don't be bullied. If this doesn't make sense to you, they're going to call you names anyway. Heck, if you're a Republican, you've already been called a racist, a sexist, a homophobe, simply because you have values of any kind, because you don't answer to them and or the state. And ironically, Republicans are more law-abiding than the Democrats who are trying to dictate laws. Geez, I could write that down. I should write that down. That's a good one. It's true. Isn't it funny? The people who are most likely to be lawbreakers and to make excuses for criminals are the people that are telling us that we ought to have more laws and that we are the ones that need to be reined in. It's pure projection, folks. That's what it is. Anyway, we're going to take a little break right now. And when we come back, we're going to totally shift gears and we're going to talk to Doug and Don Newsom about their harrowing story of true heroism and persistence and resilience. You're listening to Spouting Off, and we'll be right back after this.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/askAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/askAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
Hi, I'm Shelby, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is President of Hillsdale College, Dr. Larry Yarn, on Congress granting itself legal exemptions.
In 1788, as the Constitution was being debated, James Madison wrote that the chief restraint preventing Congress from passing laws that apply to us, but not to Congress, is, quote, the vigilant and manly spirit which actuates the people of America, a spirit which nourishes freedom. If this spirit shall ever diminish so as to tolerate a law not obligatory on the legislature, the people will be prepared to tolerate anything but liberty. Today, Americans live under many laws that do not apply to elected officials and those who work for them. If we hope to preserve our liberty, we must recultivate that manly spirit of freedom that our fathers had.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To receive a free pocket constitution and declaration, go to constitutionminute.com.
Welcome back to Spouting Off. I'm your host, Karen Cataline, and I have been looking forward to this for longer than I can possibly tell you. When I heard that Doug and Don Newsome had been evacuated from their home in Paradise, California, way back in October, it was October, he'll tell us, I was stunned and I thought, nah, they're going to be okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, they lost everything, their home, their vehicles, their business, everything. I mean, I can scarcely imagine. And I wanted to have them on one of the programs that I was filling in for on terrestrial radio, but we couldn't even connect with them because people were having such a hard time even making contact. So I have not heard their story except online until right now. And I told them, I'm not going to do this show until I get to have you on as guests. So we're going to start, and maybe Don will join us. But these are the twin brothers, Doug and Don Newsome. Here's Doug Newsome, the producer, owner of BBS Radio, who is a model of resilience, strength, and let's find out what it was that kept him going. Welcome to Spouting Off on the air this time, Doug Newsome, my producer.
Well, hi, Karen. Such a fine, wonderful, warm introduction. Thank you.
Well, I just want to know. So tell us, give us a sense of what this was like for you. If you could just, you know, tell us the story. What happened? And what was the date it all started?
They had all started 2 days prior. We were notified by PG&E that they were going to turn off the power due to high winds in the area. Never occurred. Nobody has ever done this. I remember a couple of weeks prior to that, them flying overhead with helicopters from morning to night. I was wondering why they were doing that. Then, you know, a couple of weeks go by and we get this, you know, through your cellular and through your phone, and you're thinking, that's unusual. And happened the very next day, and then the
happened through your cellular and your phone?
Well, they phoned up and said, we're going to be turning off power in your area due to high winds. But they never turned off the power, and they notified us 24 hours and 48 hours prior to the fire. And then when the fire happens, there's still power on. Don and I get up late morning. You know, we're rolling out of bed around 10 a.m. because we don't really have to work till later, and we work very, very late, so we'll get as much rest as we can get.
Mm-hmm.
And we go out, everything seems to be normal, and you know, bear in mind, we're on Paradise. I mean, if Paradise exists as a town, we're one block from it, going down the hill, one block, you know.
Wow.
So as it's doing its thing, we're kind of doing our thing, not realizing there's no notices, there's no sirens, there's no phone calls, and the power's still on. Now, that's hard to believe, right? So 10:30 rolls around, the power finally comes off. And remember, this fire started at 6 in the morning, 6:50 in the morning, so it's already
Do you remember the date? Hmm? October what?
11th, I believe. Or 8th?
October
11th. Thursday night?
Wow. Okay, October 11th, 2018.
Eighth. Right.
Uh-huh.
And so we figure out, well, the heck with it. The power just went off. We better start the generators. You know, we can't lose business. You got to have power, right?
Right, right.
And as we're doing this, Melissa, Donald's wife, realizes that something's wrong in the area because she's getting called that people are evacuating.
Huh.
Now, we're a little bit scared. We're like, we've had to evacuate a few times in the past, right? No worries. Doesn't seem though. But within 15 minutes, you can't see in front of your face. It's all dark. Explosions are going off around you because propane tanks, a lot of people on propane. And there's we're in a ridge, you know, the ridge that comes up the mountain, a canyon ridge kind of, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of red glowing all around the ridge.
Whoa.
So then you realize, you panic, of course. It happens so fast, you panic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and yeah, I would.
Yeah, you take nothing, and your brain says, I'll be back tomorrow. Uh-huh. As you're stepping into vehicles, two of which are on empty, and wondering how you're even going to get down the hill bumper to bumper. That was kind of a strange experience. A little surreal. It's all happened so fast. You know, you get the kids, you get the animals, and you forget everything else. That, you know, give me 1 minute again, one more minute of life, and I would have grabbed my hard drives. Give me 10 minutes of life, I would have grabbed the valuables. Mm-hmm. Right? But you don't. You think, oh, I'll be back, you know, even though you can't even see anymore and you're scared with it, you're not thinking straight. You know, there was no plan of emergency. Now they say plan ahead, put something ahead. But yes, smart idea. We didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And most people don't.
And most people don't. Right.
And even if they have a plan, they think what you think, which is, well, I'll be back.
Right. Well, there's no going back to that. It's like a bomb went off. Because we're media, we were able to go up into the area and see what it looked like. And wow. Wow. It's like literally a bomb came in, flattened everything, and everything was charred, right?
We saw the pictures. They were unbelievable.
Right, right.
And where your house used to be.
And yet some of the neighbors up on the hillside, they actually survived. We believe, I Don and I kind of believe, now this is, you know, it's just a belief, that the wiring in the smart meters is catalytic. And the fire was actually what Donald and I also believe, because we looked at some of the wires coming out of the ground for our sprinkler systems, where we had wires everywhere, you know. But it was those wires that were on literally melted and on fire and backwards when they shouldn't have been, because maybe they were surrounded by water or something like that. But you could see coming out of the earth, even if it was 4 feet down, that the fire was moving along the wires. So, you know, maybe it's, I don't really know, but it seemed like there was a combustible situation, you know, right in the area of the smart meters probably, and it just did something to the home and left the trees. I mean, almost all the bushes and trees are going to survive. That's hard
to
believe.
Yes, we saw that online. Anybody who was watching and looking saw that the trees were left. And so, of course, the conspiracy theories went bananas and everybody said this was an attack, but nobody wanted to admit it. And I never believe those kinds of things.
I don't believe them either.
There's some sort of evidence. Yeah. And
it's just faulty wiring.
Of course, we saw pictures of trees that were on fire from the inside out.
Sure.
And of course that can happen, right? Because the inside is more flammable probably
than
the outside, which might be wet.
Right.
Right. A lot of people died in this devastation, right?
Oh,
how many people died in this?
I think 84, 86, or 88, one of those numbers.
There, but for the grace of God, go all of us.
Yeah.
Tell us what happened when you were evacuated. What was that like? And you grabbed your family and your animals, and where did you go and what did you do?
Well, thank goodness.
We hear the phone in the background because you're actually working, but you're doing this interview with us, and that's a great thing. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Well, thank goodness we actually had Donald's wife knew somebody, because Donald's daughter, Kaylee, did ballet with a girl, and her mother owned a winery. And, you know, they were friends, the family, because we'd work with them to get them somewhere, take care of their daughter while they were doing their thing in ballet. So it was kind of give and take, and they offered to put us up in their bed and breakfast. And we took the opportunity. And, you know, it was temporary, but we needed to be somewhere, and they supplied us a place where most people didn't know where they were going to be.
Yeah.
We immediately had bedrooms, you know, washroom facilities, and a place to be dry. That was amazing, and we got very, very lucky.
Yeah. So you were able to take care of your animals, but then it was how long before you were able to go back and find out? I remember getting an email from you or a Facebook post when you finally found out that you had lost everything. That took about a couple days, didn't it?
Right, about 3 days. That. I was going to get on my – one moment, please. Just one moment.
We're going to have Doug. See, you can't have dead air during talk radio. It just wouldn't be good. So we're going to have Doug come back to us after he takes care of the phone call, which was, oh, a little bit distracting, but not too bad.
Forgive me.
We will. No problem. Go right ahead. Thank you for taking care. You got to take care of your
business.
Yeah,
well, same caller over and over again. They were looking for some weird radio network that's not even our name, so I was. All right.
Well, you know, if we don't get to the point, and this is all valuable, important stuff, we're getting to the point. Excuse me, I didn't mean that. But if we go out late, you know, my producer might get on my case. So we got to make sure and stay on point here, right? I'm teasing. So, the thing that most people want to know more than anything else is really the emotional, spiritual side of things when something this devastating happens. And we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, losing everything, losing a business, losing a livelihood and a past full of treasures and valuables. First, let's say there was a GoFundMe operation, which really raised a whole lot of money in a short amount of time. A lot of people love you. Doug,
yes,
and Don and your families, a lot of people, you've created an enormous amount of goodwill. And so how much was raised total?
When we first, it was a friend of ours by the name of Sam Hassan, who actually owns LA Talk Radio.
Oh, really?
Yes. He decided to start the GoFundMe account. He's the only person we've ever let in our studios. And as soon as we did, he went out and he started Competitive Network. And by the way, very, very successfully so. One of the few that's really does a wonderful job. We love Sam. We meet him two or three times a year. So he decided to do a GoFundMe account. And of course, Donald's daughter decided to do a GoFundMe account on her own. You know, it's just amazing. And you know, between those two accounts and a donation link through PayPal that my family said, you know, share that link because we don't want to pay through GoFundMe, right? That I think Donald and I received a total of about 50,000.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? And you deserve every dime of it because you worked hard and this was a devastating loss. So from an emotional standpoint, I remember seeing the emails from you or the notices from you. We're going to be back by the end of the month. We're going to be back. And I thought, look, you know, more power to him. He's keeping his attitude up, but most people would be down for a year.
Right.
Most people would be hammered on the ground. And I knew you guys are phenomenally persistent, phenomenally upbeat and happy. But what kept you going?
What keeps anybody going through life's great tragedies? Hope, which we have in abundance. But more important than that, and a goal. You know, what else are you going to live for? I mean, if you live for something, you can still make that something happen. So in our world, the thing that we wanted the most to happen was the success of the network. And so that never goes away, and that's what you focus on. You know, if you want to change the world, if you have a calamity to yourself, maybe the best way to get out of there is start helping others. It's just that sort of a focus to, I think, do a good service. Because BBS Radio really is our it's a desire to put out programming that's not mainstream and really give people, you know, more data and more information. So we think it's a noble effort, right? Mm-hmm. And to that end, we want to work and build it as big as we can. So that really became our focus. When you're a twin, you know, not alone. If you're alone, yeah, maybe it'd be tough. It'd be tough. You wouldn't have somebody slapping you. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Where are we going to go, right? You're all alone. You're like,
An identical twin, besides.
Well, fraternal, but we look identical.
Oh, fraternal. Oh, you look
yeah,
identical.
Yeah, we're 3 minutes apart.
You're fraternal twins.
We're 3 minutes apart. Can you believe? But yeah, that motivation.
Wow. Who's older? We always want to know who's older.
I'm older by 3 minutes.
By 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is Doug there, by the way, in our last?
Yes. Do you want to speak with Don, you mean?
Yeah.
The
yeah,
younger
Don,
one.
Don, yes.
The younger brother.
Do you have to talk one at a time, or can we hear both of you
yes,
at the same
no,
time?
I'll bring them on right now. It's
oh,
one
yeah.
at a time. Yeah, we've
Don.
Got set up for one at a time.
Okay.
Here he goes. Okay. One moment.
Hey, Don. And their voices are similar, too. You know, sometimes I can't tell who's who. And you won't be able to tell either, I bet. Well, okay.
Well,
is this Don?
This is Don.
Oh, okay. Now I can tell the difference. You have a slightly lower.
I'll keep my voice a little more manly.
This is the difference between, let's see, Jack Kennedy, John Kennedy, and Teddy Kennedy. They were all just different voice ranges, but it was the same voice.
Right,
it was just sped up on a higher frequency. So does this pretty much concur with your experience? What would you like to add? And I'm so glad that you're getting on the air and telling us a little bit about your story.
Oh, thank you for inviting me, and thank you to your audience for allowing me to be a part of it. Thank you, really, Karen, truly. We love you. We do.
Well, I love you.
Thank you.
So what kept you going? And just say a few words about this, because it's an amazing story. You're going to have to write a book.
Well, you know, it's not an uncommon story these days. I mean, a lot of people have to deal with losing everything and one difficult situation after another. The world seems to be in abundance of that. So, you know, I pretty much got through it, I think, like most people. I just, or maybe not like most people, but some people. And that's in that I really didn't have time to worry, to fret. And it's not in me to do that. But the fact that I didn't have time for it, because I have a wife and I have four children, and they're ages 14 to 20.
Oh, wow.
And so I... You know, I have a wife that looks after the family, and then, of course, the kids. And so supporting that and supporting the business and trying to get everything up and running and relocated twice, and then the family ended up being split up because two of the older kids needed to finish out school, and they had scholarships, and we couldn't pull them away. So it's interesting. I must say that, you know, I'm out of the old bubble and into a new one. It just feels a lot different. It's surreal at times. But again, I just work through it. I work so much. I'm like my twin brother. I don't really have a lot else to do. I never did. I mean, my brother and I have been working together as partners since we were babies. And
isn't
we used
something?
To compete a lot. So our competition led us into working harder, and then the other would work harder, then the other would work harder. And both of you just end up working so hard. You know that you have a great partnership, and you know that you're going to thrive because, you know, your partner is your brother, and you both have the same ideas, machinations. It's very easy to get things done because I don't have to ask a lot of people. I just say, Doug, should we do it? And if he agrees, it's done. So it's a great environment for working. Mm-hmm.
You know
so that's
what,
how
Don,
I got through it.
I was going to ask Doug. I could ask either you or Doug. It doesn't matter to me. In our few minutes left, as you know better than anybody, that we have a time clock here, but just an amazing story.
Oh,
is right at the time this happened, you were embarking on some spectacular new achievements for BBS Radio. In our time left, can you speak to those for the audience so they might know a little about what is coming down the pike? I know some of it is for hosts, but a lot of it is in the expansion. And just at that expansion was when this terrible tragedy happened. And I knew you were going to come back. I didn't expect it to happen so soon.
It'll set us back a good 4 months. 4 to 6 months. That's the truth of it. It set us back in listeners' time on site, web visitors. It set us back, you know, in syndication a little bit. I mean, it's going to take a good 4 months to get back up to snuff, so to speak. So, you know, the government contracts we were heading into, and we lost all the paperwork and even our naturalization papers, U.S. citizenship papers. And so, and they want that because you're being vetted by the DOD, at least your personal computers and so on. And there's all these little things that were, you know, minuscule at the time. And now they're mountains, you know, so it's... Yeah. There are a few, right, so there's a few things. We had an agreement, you know, already sent off to iHeart, 38 pages signed, and so we were looking forward to streaming through them, but all the changes, we couldn't get consistent streams up long enough to be able to facilitate them. So, and we're still working on that because we have to bring a transmission line in. We've tried all the 1 gig Comcast. We've tried the high, the best plan AT&T offers. We've tried the best plan Digital Path has to offer. We've tried the best plan unwired, the biggest wireless, direct line of sight right to the tower right there. And still, we can't get consistent enough bandwidth to meet our needs. Consistent. Now, it's not a, you know, we don't care about a lot. We just need consistent bandwidth, and only a transmission line can do that. We, you know, and we've tried them all. Yeah.
If anybody can do it, you will.
Well, we will.
And you also you also have a loyal bunch of hosts, and I'm happy to count myself as one of them.
Thank
and a
you.
Loyal bunch of listeners
we
who
do.
Were delighted to hear BBS Radio back online.
They put us back on live. They did. I mean, they were desirous enough that they, you know, they stepped up to the plate in 30 days. And when we asked for a little bit more a week later, they said, here you go. Now get back to business. And we did. I mean, I just love that. Our audience, our listeners, our hosts are the best family anybody could ask for.
Well, I'll tell you, it may sound a little self-indulgent, this first show, but I have not heard the story. And I'm glad to hear the story. We're going to have to wrap it up. Please say goodbye to Doug. And, of course, he will be behind the switchboard for the foreseeable future.
Bye. Thank you, Karen. We love you.
And we love you. And Spouting Off loves you as well. So next week, we're going to be back with all the issues of the day. Ideas worthy of mockery and derision, which I haven't even gotten to talk about, but maybe I will. Thank you to Doug and Don for being my guests, for being my producers, and for being BBS Radio, and for having the kind of persistence and resilience that we hope all of us will have in such a very tough and challenging time as you had to deal with. Thanks to HW, the multi-talented guy with the IQ greater than that of a small soap dish. And tune in next week. We're so glad we're back, when there will be a whole lot more to spout off about here on Spouting Off.